Hello, everybody. This is Shane from CheapHomeGrow.com interviewing Caleb. Caleb is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he is a cannabis advocate. He's on the show today, and I'm going to ask him some questions. So, Caleb, I'll tell you what. Please tell my readers about yourself. Give them a background of where you're from and your relationship with cannabis.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name's Caleb. I live in Philadelphia, PA. I'm originally from Wilkes-Barre, PA. You know, I grew up normal kid, blue-collar family, hardworking. Grew up an athlete playing sports, you know, the whole nine. Actually started working at a pretty young age. I was 13. I started washing dishes. I learned to trade. I was, you know, in restaurants, I worked in restaurants from 13 until I was 23. I've been using cannabis ever since I've been 12 years old. It's something I've always enjoyed. It's something that was always around. Being that young, though, you don't understand. You know, we were told it was bad for us. You know, it actually ended up saving my life in a way. So, you know, that's me and marijuana, me and cannabis, with, you know, our relationship runs deep.
I mean, how, well, that's, you know, that's an interesting story there. But how did it save your life? I mean, can you go a little bit deeper there?
Sure. I was addicted to painkillers, which eventually led to all types of different addictions and, you know, eventually led to heroin. And it was, you know, when you hit heroin, cannabis doesn't matter. It doesn't do anything for you. You don't even think about it. But the withdrawals from painkillers, opioids, it's so intense that's why it's so hard for people to stay clean from it, because, you know, the withdrawal, the psychological games that your mind plays on you, and cannabis really, really helped me go through the withdrawal period, but also, you know, maintain my sanity. I was in a car accident. Actually, well, my back injury started at 12. I got injured playing football. Fast forward, I was in a car accident, threw my back out of whack again. I had insurance at the time, and then I was, you know, fitness is part of my story too, and I was actually lifting weights. I was squatting, and I went up from a rep, and I was standing there with the barbell on my back, and I felt liquid pop out of my back, and that's really, after the car accident, after, you know, weightlifting, my back really got damaged, and, you know, not, I was so determined to stay off of any type of opiate or opioid that cannabis was pretty much my last resort, because I really don't do well with any type of pharmaceuticals. I have allergic reactions to multiple ones, and, you know, it's just I prefer the natural out these days.
You know, yeah, so basically if it wasn't for cannabis, I guess in some sense you probably wouldn't be here.
Shane, I'd probably be dead today because, you know, they want you, when I say they, I'm talking about people who went the traditional route of getting clean. I don't even like using that word clean, you know, but clean, sober, whatever they want to call it, you know, I went the non-traditional route, and it's what you I'm sorry, I lost track there for a second. What was the?
In terms of, I guess, saving your life, and you were going down that road, and how?
Oh,
you know, right.
Yeah, with the opiates and the injury, you know, and they, the people, they always tell you, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, watch what you do, but, you know, nobody knows your pain,
mm-hmm.
And what else would. You know, if I went to see a doctor, and I did go see a doctor, and they wanted to give me steroids, they wanted to give me painkillers, and they wanted to give me, you know, some other anti-inflammatory drug, and right there, you know, look, they're hooking me back in, and, you know, it just wasn't the option was always there. Actually, it was right next door. You know, I could have got Percocets all day next door. If I really wanted some heroin, I didn't have to go too far for that either.
Mm.
And well, I chose to use cannabis.
Right. Well, what do you mean by next door? I mean, like, what do you, what does that exactly mean?
It means exactly what it means. I could go next door right now and get Percocet. The guy offers me Percocet probably 2 to 3 times a week. And I've been telling him for a couple of years now that, you know, I don't do them. But the first one's always free, Sean.
Yeah, they basically want to get you hooked. Is that, I'm assuming that's what you're saying.
Does it get any sweeter than a guy who goes to work 5 days a week, walking up with a paycheck on Friday, knowing he's going to knock on your door before he goes in his?
Yeah, I can see your point there.
That's the reality of it, especially here, and I've lived in a bunch of different places in Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you what, they're all the same, and actually the counties are a little worse than the cities, you know, just being the availability, like, you know, it's always here, but we're a little more distracted in the big city, you know, there's things to do, and those little towns, they're dark, they're desolate in the counties, and boom, I mean, you're depressed when you pull up. I mean, you know, imagine living that. There's nothing to do but drink and use drugs.
You know, I'm from Rhode Island. I've lived, you know, in the, let's call it the greater Providence area, which is, you know, the capital city of Rhode Island. I mean, so there's not many desolate areas of where I'm from. Although, if you ask the typical Rhode Islander, where is like the most western part of the state, nobody would know, because as a Rhode Islander, we don't want to drive 25 minutes to get to anywhere.
Right.
But that's just me. But what I'm curious about, when you say desolate, what exactly do you mean? I mean, like, how far are you away from, I guess, let's call it civilization, if you know what I'm saying?
When you're around these places, it's empty looking. You know, it's just there's nothing going on, and a lot of times there's not even people outside. You know, they look like like a small city town, and you can ride through. Like I said, it's not that there's no people, but there used to be so many people. It used to be vibrant, and it turned into the Wild West in a lot of these counties with, you know, the drugs coming in. You got to think, like, where, especially the northeastern part of Pennsylvania, you know, you got 476 coming from Philadelphia. You have Route 80 coming from New Jersey and New York. These guys can make double what they're making in the city and live cheaper. So they move in, and, you know, it's been going on. People, doctors been getting people addicted. Well, Perk 30, what I heard, they're going for more than $1 a milligram on the street. So you want to pay $35, $40 for one pill that's going to get you high one time, or do you want, you know, for that much, we call them Philly bundles, you can get a bundle of 15 instead of 10 bags of dope for about $45, $50. Mm-hmm. You know, so you do the math, you know, and these guys take them bundles all the way up to these counties, Redding, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Chester, Coatesville, they take all, you know, and they turn them into these crazy fuel drug towns.
Oh, really?
Jeez. You know, the natives are scared to go outside.
Really? Is that bad?
It's that bad. No. There was a drug bust in Redding, PA not too long ago, and, I mean, they were flying kilos in from Puerto Rico. They had meth coming in from the West Coast. They rounded up 30 guys, 30 cars, about 50 guns, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, you know, another hundreds of thousands of dollars in drugs. It's a mess.
How about the violence out there? Is that a problem too?
Absolutely, especially Redding, of all of them. I mean, Redding's got, like, the most murders per capita. I mean, they're like, they used to be top 5 in the United States. They might be top 10, top 15 now. But, yeah, when you got drugs and you got money, you got violence.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know it was that bad. Jeez. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. Well, I mean, I know that you started off the interview, but why don't you tell the audience about your success with the cannabis and go into detail there.
Okay. It's more of like a three part. I definitely use the cannabis, but I also use a proper diet and physical fitness of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the cannabis, what the cannabis helps with is, you know, when the scariest thing, Shane, I ever did in my life was making that decision to be like, I'm done. I'm not a crier, but boy, is it scary, and boy, did I bawl my eyes out like a baby. And, you know, not just this time, each and every time. You know, I tried getting and staying off of that garbage for a long time, and it felt like it was never going to end. And I was actually, you know, like I said, this time around, I didn't start. I got clean, and I wasn't using cannabis in the beginning. And then I had my injury. And, like I said, the treatment centers, AA, NA, you know, all that type of stuff I stayed away from. But they brainwashed you to say, you know, if you use cannabis, you will be shooting dope again. Shane, that's a head scratcher for me, because I know me, I know my body. I never did one drug and said, hey, man, you know, I just drank a beer, let me go get some cocaine. But they talk about the progression, and I'll agree there. You know, you start not with cannabis. I mean, you don't start smoking cannabis and say, oh, man, I really wish I had some Oxycontin right now. You know, I'm usually going, where's the Doritos? You know, where's my Cheetos? Hey, you know where the remote went? I mean, that's what happened to me when I used cannabis. And I started using it for the pain. And then, I already knew my anxiety was high. You know, I already knew I wasn't the happiest person in the world with pain and dealing with everyday life and the struggles. And, you know, I actually broke away from people, you know, always calling me an addict and telling me I had to do this or I was going to relapse or telling me to do that. You know, I actually just told my father that I'm smoking cannabis again because, you know, when you're addicted like this, you know, it affects the whole family. And if it wasn't for him, you know, I wouldn't be alive. My mother doesn't even know. He knows I'm doing this interview. She doesn't, you know, so it's still a weird and a touchy-feely subject, but I do what's right for me, and I'm using it to combat pain, but it's helping me sleep better, it's helping me be more aware, it's helping my anxiety, it's helping my performance at work, you know, everything's kind of a lot more easygoing, and coming off of opiates and opioids, I mean, you're high-strung, you know, all the time, and you're always on the lookout, it's, you know, sometimes your mind plays tricks on you, your stomach turns. You know, these are all things that were hard to deal with in the beginning because they reminded me of going through withdrawal and my body going, you can end that right now with one pill, one bag.
And for you, the cannabis that you ingest or, you know, that you smoke, that's cured you. Is that, I mean, in a nutshell, that's basically what you're saying.
Is it cured me?
Right.
Yes. You know, this is, cannabis has become my one-stop shop. I don't even take Advil or Aleve anymore. You know, it's not even in my house. You know, I use it for a bunch of different things. And, you know, it's just, I actually, by using cannabis, I said, why am I, you know, working out and stuff? Why am I taking all these pre-workouts and protein powders, processed crap? You know, I'm sitting there, I'm scratching my head going like, you know, it's been changing me all around.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that kind of sounds crazy to some people. Like, you know, they're probably going to say, this guy's off his rocker, but, you know, that's just my story.
What advice do you give family members that are grieving because their loved one is, you know, addicted to, you know, a certain drug?
It all starts with familiarity with me with on that topic from being through it so many times and being on the opposite end. It gives me a different perspective. You know, it was I understand their urgency and their frustration, their anger, their pain, And, you know, a lot of times, more so than not, they just want to talk. Like, it's more of a sense of hope that they get, that they see somebody, I'm 28 years old, you know, they see another person in their 20s being able to do it. You know, they want their kid to be able to do it. But they're going, you know, he's already been through X amount of treatment. She's already been through Suboxone and methadone, you know, like, you know, what else is there? I did this, I did that. And, you know, it gives them a sense of hope that there's another way. But at the end, you know, I listen. I interact with everybody. And, you know, nobody goes unnoticed. And it's a little heartbreaking each and every time, but it basically boils down to, you know, and at the end of it, a lot of times, you know, you don't hear back from people. They say their kids are, you know, get in touch with me or their loved one or, you know, husband, whatever. But the truth of the matter is, it's got to start with them first. You know, whether or not they use cannabis, they go to AA, NA, some yoga retreat, whatever it is they want to do, you know, if they're not fully committed to the process, none of them are going to work.
Right. So basically what you're saying is that it starts with the individual.
And them wanting to, you know, officially be done with the garbage.
Right. It's like, I guess it's akin to, say, like, you know, wanting to lose 15 or 20 pounds or going on a diet, you know. I mean, it starts not with the diet, not with the food. It starts with the person that wants to lose the weight.
Absolutely.
It's not just losing the weight, but it's maintaining that weight loss. So now you have to have a different mindset when you actually get there.
You have to be very disciplined. You know, that's my life in a nutshell, is being disciplined and persevering no matter what.
I think it's a story that I think a lot of people that are hopefully going to be listening to this will appreciate. You know, basically you have to rely on yourself.
Yeah, and you know what the frustrating thing is about that, Shane, is it can be very intimidating.
Well, we have to open the house though.
I feel that, you know, there's, in this day and age, you know, there's a lot of discipline that's lost. And, you know, you got to respect the hard work. You got to be disciplined. There's no other way to do it. I mean, this is a full, it literally has to be treated like a full-time job. This has to be managed before you can do anything else. You know, so that's all scary. You know, when you tell somebody how you do it and they're going, oh my God, you know, I don't eat right, so that might be out, you know. Well, what if I go back to heroin because I'm using cannabis? You know, that's out of the picture. And then I got to work out. What are you kidding me? But that's where the discipline starts. It's a lifestyle change is really what it is. You know, I'm not trying to sell anybody anything. You know, I'm just trying to show people that, you know, this is what I do. This is how I do it. And I'm willing to share free of charge.
Sure. Exactly. Right. So it's, you know, so it's not just physical. It's not just mental. It's a whole lifestyle, basically.
Exactly.
How can people, because I mean, a few minutes earlier you were saying, okay, you know, it all starts with the individual. So my question is, I mean, how can people help themselves when dealing with their addiction?
I would say, you know, got to start loving yourself. Whatever it takes. If it takes wake something, and this will sound stupid on so many levels because it sounded so stupid to me, and it may not to the, you know, I'm gonna call, you know, just generalize people as a whole. But when you tell an addict something like this, they're like, yeah, okay. But walk into the mirror, look at yourself, and tell yourself, I love you. You know, look into your eyes, because, you know, I know for me when I was using, I avoided the mirror, you know, and that love had to start with me. everybody's got to realize that they're worth it. This isn't necessarily a moral fault, more as it was, you know, widely available in this list. You know, people got injured playing sports, whatever it may be, car accident, slipped and fell, and they got a strip of painkillers. You know, just because you got hooked enough, you're shooting heroin, doesn't make you a bad person. You know, you're still worth it. Know that, you know that your story's not over, and that you can come out on top. You know, it's not the end, and actually these last 4 years of my life that I've been away from drugs and alcohol have been the best 4 years of my life that I've ever had. So not only does it get better, but it gets way better because I'm going to say this, Shane, there's nothing harder that I've been through in my life, and I've been through a lot. I've seen a lot. And people say that after talking to me, you know, that's always a comment. And nothing has been harder. And I look at life like if I beat heroin daily, and I've been doing it consistently, what are my limits? Where can I stop? You know, because the sky's the limit with that one. I haven't done anything harder yet. Shane, it helped me get clean a bunch of times beforehand. You know, it definitely helped me through the withdrawals. And, you know, part of that story with that problem with me was I don't want to blame. I don't want to say, you know, but when people tell your family and they put stuff in their head, you know, it's only natural that the family reacts going, okay, you know, let's do this without the cannabis. You know, this just doesn't seem right. You know, there's something wrong here. And that's the propaganda that they were fed, and that's okay because it's now, you know, the truth is now out.
Well, like in terms of your withdrawals, I mean, how, you know, if you can go in a little bit deeper, I mean, how exactly does cannabis help with your withdrawals or with maybe people's in withdrawals in general? I mean, can you maybe speak? I mean, and listen, I know you're not a doctor, but perhaps you can speak a little bit about that, if possible.
Okay. Yeah. I'll put a little bit into perspective of how nasty it can get. So the very first time there was, you know, I dabbled with heroin. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was getting pills cheaper on the street than heroin was. And I was really mixed up with some really bad people on some high levels. And you know, I was straight pharmaceutical. Actually, those old Oxycontins I prefer over any bag of heroin that's on the street right now because it's mostly cut with fentanyl anyway. But when those, you know, the stuff on the streets, it's faster acting. It's in, it's out, you know. Same thing with Xanax. You go up, you come right down, you know, whereas these pharmaceuticals are a little more, that's why people have such a hard time coming off Suboxone and Methadone. The stuff feels like it's in your bones. It won't leave. So the first time, you know, I was like, I ain't going to rehab. Like, you know, you people don't know me. You know, I'm not sure how when, you know. So I went in. They gave me a little 7-day Suboxone taper, and my grandmother, who's a nurse, opened her home to me and offered to take care of me. And, Shane, I didn't think I'd need it, but I never needed anything more in my life than that woman at that point in time. And you know, that I left the treatment center on the box, and I couldn't wait to get a coffee from Wawa. My grandfather stopped. We got one. All was good, right? Wake up the next morning. He said, I got a pot of Dunkin' Donuts for you. All right, cool. You know, pours me a cup, sitting there drinking with him, and all of a sudden, Shane, I never felt anything like this in my body before. And you got to realize I was using pharmaceuticals that were, you know, way deep in my bloodstream. They told me the amount that I was using should have killed me 5 days prior to, you know. I didn't even believe. I thought it was normal. You know, when they saw the amount I was taking, they were in shock. You know, they were like, oh, my God, you've got to stop right now. And, yeah, it was really bad. I mean, you know, I'm 5'7", you know, I'm a stocky 175, and you know, I was down to 123 pounds.
Wow.
So the damage was done. The damage was there. And, you know, I'm drinking that cup of coffee, and all hell broke loose in my body. And, you know, they started me on the Suboxone, you know, 24 hours after, but they knocked me out with phenobarbital. I mean, I experienced what I thought were serious withdrawals at that time, but they didn't get serious until that Suboxone left my system about, 38 hours after my last dose, and it was on and popping. And the anxiety, it's going to get a little graphic here. I couldn't stop shitting my brains out. It was just nonstop diarrhea, throwing up, coming out both ends. Reality started hitting. The lights, all the lights in the house, the natural sunlight coming in was killing me. I had a major headache. I'm burying myself under pillows. I wanted to scream at my grandmother to shut the fuck up, but I could not do that, nor have I ever, nor will I ever. But, that's, she wanted to get me out and take me to the grocery store. I'm going, Nana, I can't do this. And we get in there. She must have just seen I was shaking. I was sweating. I hadn't done anything normal in years. I was in the streets heavy, So me going grocery shopping and all that type of stuff was not anything that I did. So I'm going, these people, she was in Bumblefuck, PA, too. There's nothing out there. There's maybe three people in the store. I couldn't handle it. Then the bone aches kicked in, and Shane, I couldn't, I didn't know what was going on with me. I'm hunched over like an old man. I can barely walk. It felt like my bones were cracking and aching with every step. I was, for me to walk 10 feet probably took a minute. And then I thought the worst, how much worse can this get? Try not sleeping, and now they're dumbing me down on Effexor and Ambien. And I forget what else they Theraquil at the time. And then I had a nasty allergic reaction in the mix with all that. And my legs were going crazy. My grandmother actually laid in bed with me and was, rubbing my legs to try and calm them down because my allergic reaction was all these different muscle jerks.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get downstairs for breakfast the next day. I don't even know how to use a spoon.
Really?
Really. My grandmother, she was feeding me. Literally feeding me. I couldn't operate a stone. Go upstairs, try to take a shower because I haven't showered in a couple of days because I couldn't do anything. I can't even take my own pants off.
Jesus.
Let alone get in the shower and shower myself. This was bad. And, a couple of days into it, I had some cannabis on me. And, I was sneaking outside every once in a while to get relief. You get caught because I can't even function. And she takes my stuff away from me. She gave it back the next morning. It was like, we see it helps you get a little bit of relief here. And we were under the assumption that these withdrawals were going to last, maybe another 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward 3.5 months later.
Wow.
They weren't that intense all the way through, but mm-hmm. My God, were they bad enough to make life miserable.
Yeah, it certainly sounds so.
That's just, and then you got the post-acute withdrawal syndrome, Shane, and I didn't last, I was on Xanax after that, a couple months later, then it was right back into the Percocets, got my jaw broke, got hefty, hefty scripts, about 500 pills to get my jaw broke. Then I had to get another surgery because the screw stripped and I got an infection because the saliva hit the metal. And I was back on painkillers again and again and again. The cycle just continues.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Do you believe marijuana is a gateway drug?
Not at all.
Okay. Why is that?
I don't believe it's a gateway drug just because of how easy everything else is to accept. Alcohol is the first mind-altering substance I put into my body. If anything was a gateway drug, I would say it would be alcohol because, I'm going to speak for me and from my experience. Cannabis wasn't allowed when I was a kid. I smoked it, but, it wasn't as bad to go out and drink. And at every party I was at, there was cannabis, but there was also cocaine, there was pills, there was shrooms, there was this, there was... to me, alcohol is the real gateway drug, but the government makes money on it. They tax it. they're getting their money off of that, getting it off of tobacco and big pharma. That, you know, cannabis. Let's turn that into propaganda. You know, this is what you need to stay away from. But they know the benefits to it. That's why they did it.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear that you are pro cannabis, but your detractors would say your claims of healing people with cannabis aren't verified. Now, what do you say to those detractors that say, you know, that, you know, healing with cannabis is something that isn't verified? What do you say to those people right now?
It depends on who the detractor is. You know, are we talking your average Joe on the street, or are we talking, somebody who's deep-rooted in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, or, you know, like a rehab institution type? To me, it's a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pretty easy to read between the lines how people are going to come at me based on how they approach me. Depending on how they approach me, and, you know, so I get it on my Twitter every once in a while, too. You know, I won't argue with people. I'm living proof. I have people messaging me. I retweet other people who have similar experiences and staying away from narcotics and with cannabis. And it works. The proof is there. If people are open-minded and really want to, you know, if they're just going, you know, like, let's say an old timer who was taught marijuana was bad all throughout their life. You know, mm-hmm. they use that word marijuana, right?
Right.
We call it cannabis now. You know, mm-hmm. educating somebody like that is easy. Mm-hmm. And they usually, you know, they follow suit pretty quick, and they see it, and, you know, all these videos that are mainstream with older people using cannabis is great. You know, those aren't as hard to turn as, let's say, you know, somebody who's, you know, heavy into AA or NA. You know, they just want to argue logic with me. You know, you can't argue science. You know, what I can argue what they do all day long, and I'm not discrediting what they do. You know, if that works for people, whatever keeps you off of opiates and opioids, you know, by all means, if it gives you a better life, by all means. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with you for the sake of arguing with you. What I do works for me. You know, I just ask people to respect that.
Fair enough. I'll tell you what. Do you feel that legalization is a moral issue?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely. I mean, it's just wrong. I mean, you know, even I look at this guy, Jeff Sessions, you know, going to court with a little girl who has epilepsy. You know, it's like, where in the world would that be morally right than denying a child the proper medication? You know, that's what works for her. You know, so, and then, you know, taking it back to the Jim Crow and, you know, people, you know, attacking communities of color. And, you know, it's wrong. I mean, the statistics show, especially in Philadelphia, you know, and I my numbers aren't going to be completely accurate, but I believe it's somewhere like 40 or 50% higher incarceration rate. Even with the decriminalization of cannabis in Philadelphia, in the city of Philadelphia, I believe, you know, 70, I think it was last year they said 70 to 80% of the arrests were African-American. You know, so they're still attacking, you know, communities of color, and that there's nothing morally right there as well. I mean, you know, it's just more all over the board. You know, just you know, the DEA knocking people who have you know, their grows and stuff out in California, raiding them. I mean, that's hard work. Right. Yeah, they're a working man. They're in a state where they're legally allowed to do that under their state laws, but, you know, the federal task force can come in whenever and rob them of all that hard work. There's blood, sweat, and tears in that.
Are you an advocate for smaller government?
And what, like,
well, in a sense, in the sense of, or well, I mean, I guess it, you know, smaller government and deregulation in a sense of letting the cannabis industry thrive, like, you know, making it legal on a federal level, and, you know, seeing where the free market, you know, takes us, so to speak.
Oh yeah, I'm all for, you know, whatever it would be to get cannabis legalized, but it's, and do you mean by smaller government, like, as an example, like for a different country, or I'm not somebody who's big into the news and politics, only because I know that the you know, these people, a lot of it's lies and BS and, you know, fabrication, and whatever they want to do is what they're going to do, just like they're doing with this. And, you know, I don't focus too much on politics. I live my life, but, you know, whatever it would be to get it on a broader scale, you know, there's money to be made. But, you know, if we're the big government and we got big pharma and all these, like, I'm all for the small business and people thriving. You know, I'm a neighborhood guy, and, you know, I support the small people, and I always have, I always will. That's actually what I do for a living. I actually do a co-op to actually help people buy better, so that you don't have to go to, you know, your big boxes. But they, you know, for whatever is going to get us through, I'm all for it. But I don't see that happening with the amount of money that, you know, big pharma brings in. We have to change that cash flow. There has to be something that comes out to replace that cash flow.
Do you feel cannabis can potentially lower healthcare costs?
I think cannabis can help lower healthcare costs. I mean, it's made me healthier. I actually lost, after I started smoking cannabis again and stuff, I believe, just like the science said, you know, regulating the cortisol levels with stress, and, you know, I was holding on to a good amount of water weight, and I don't know if, you know, by the cortisol and the insulin and everything acting the way it should, and all the cannabinoids hitting the right receptors, and, you know, did it make me less stressed and help me lose, you know, some healthy weight, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, they say stress kills, you know, so that right there in itself, and, you know, healthcare costs, I mean, people got to get their prescriptions, right? I mean, that costs healthcare. So, you know, eliminating prescriptions or the amount of prescriptions people take, you know, that's another way. And, you know, keeping people out of the hospital. I mean, you know, taking care of our body as a whole is, you know, a way to reduce healthcare costs. But that's another thing that America blasts all, you know, they put all the unhealthy choices right there in front of you.
Why are you so passionate about legalization throughout the United States?
Yeah, I've been arrested for cannabis, and it really is a joke. Being that it's helped me stay alive, it's helped me maintain. You know, I'm glad it's decriminalized where I live. I don't have to worry as much. But actually making cannabis legal will give people the opportunity who wouldn't use it, because they didn't want to break the law, or they didn't want any trouble, or, you know, they still believe the lie that they were fed. So if we legalize it, you know, and it becomes mainstream, I mean, to me it's mainstream now. You know, it's just a matter of time before, you know, it's like, you can freely do this. But, you know, it won't officially be mainstream, that's how I feel, until the masses feel that. And I'm talking about the older generation. I'm talking about, you know, people who you know, fear of losing their jobs because, you know, it all those things have an effect on that, where people will have the opportunity to live a healthier and better life. And really, I would like to see people with addiction problems benefit from this, because I believe that the success rate is much greater. It's another tool in the arsenal to stay away from the bullshit.
Well, I mean, the bullshit meaning what?
You know, you got, it's a whole, you know, that's why the lifestyle is important to change, because it, where the whole routine of setting up, how whatever you do, popping the pills, snorting them, shooting them, you know, whatever it is, that routine, you know, that becomes part of it. It's like a ritual. Then you got, you know, not eating, you know, just always on the go, the shady characters and the shady places that you deal with, you know, that there's no more going over to whatever block to get your cheesesteak over there, because that's your favorite cheesesteak or your favorite hoagie. Like, no, it's done now. You know, it's all those things, you know, keeping the negativity away, you know, keeping the drama away, keeping the people, the places, the things away.
All right. Well, I mean, before we sign off here, do you want to send out any shout outs or, you know, say something in your, I guess, in your closing statements?
First and foremost, I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity. You know, I don't want to, you know, necessarily shout anybody out just because, you know, people may not know that I'm doing this, may not want their names being broadcasted. But what I would like to say is, you know, you can find me on Twitter at CANNIKANNIS. And you or a loved one or anybody trying to better themselves, trying to get off of opiates or opioids or any type of narcotic, you know, and you're looking for help or advice, or you just want to know what I do, I'm always available. You know, shoot me a direct message, a DM, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, I'm available to talk, and, you know, I just want to see people, you know, use cannabis and try different things to get off of opiates and opioids and hopefully save a life.
Amen. Sweet. That I think that does it.
All right, Shane.
All right, man. Well, listen. Thank you for the thank you for the phone call. Thank you for the interview. We appreciate what you said, and we look forward to having you back on the show again.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it too.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right.